to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land we are broadcasting from. I'd also like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. And a big shout out to everybody from around the continent who is joining us via the National Indigenous Radio Service NIRS, or if you're joining us via our app 98.9 FM for the best country, which you can download for free from your app store, so please do so. Or if you're tuning in via our website 98.9 FM.com.au, via our website this program is podcasted, so please check out our website as well. You can also stream us you can also stream us on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Those platforms beaming us into your communities around the continent. And as always, it is great to have your company. Joining me on the program this morning, I speak with Molly Reynolds, the director of an amazing film about one of, you know, Australia's acting icons, David Goppeldil. I guess, starting off, Molly, could you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into our film, and tell us a bit about yourself and about the film.
Okay. Yeah. I became a documentary director was a very meandering journey, but I'm very pleased to have ended up there rather than started there, because I think it makes me a better filmmaker for it, and I kind of understand more aspects to filmmaking. But how I ended up working with the legendary David Goppeldil, I think I'll start with this film, My Name is Goppeldil. And that was because David is incredibly unwell. I mean, he was meant to be dead 3 years ago. But, he's still with us. And he, when diagnosed with his lung cancer, because, smoking too many cigarettes and too much ganja, and he did like the alcohol as well, when he got his diagnosis, Rolf De Heer, who's collaborated with David over the years, and myself went to pay our respects to David. And David was really keen to work with us, and we kind of reached, we kind of said, well, what's the best way, David can do, a work where it can be about him and he can own it. And we settled upon this documentary. And then when we realised that David was not dying soon, we discussed it. We had another team meeting, and David said, yeah, I'm most pleased to be on stage instead of in my cemetery box.
I watched the film. It's a great film. And one of the things about David is his passion and love for entertaining, through whether it's dance or through film. From your knowledge of him and his acting career, how much of his acting career was he sort of allowed to sort of shape the character around him? And is that sort of what he wanted to sort of like have more control in terms in this documentary of telling his story as well?
I think with the characters he played, I think he allowed himself whatever he decided upon. He was not afraid to kind of put it to the directors and say, yo, my character wouldn't do that. Yo, I'm going to play it this way. You've written this for a black, for a black fella, but I'm sounding like a white fella, just sort of in words and action. And so he really brings a lot to, more than a lot to his roles. He's the consummate professional. He's, he's very much the sort of person that will work to others so that he can be his very best on screen and his character can really deliver the goods. And it's kind of quite interesting because David has played characters, you know, in each of the, you know, in sort of pretty well the darkest chapters of, you know, of recent blackfella history. I'm, you know, thinking of the, you know, sort of last century or so when you think about Stolen Generations in Rabbit Proof Fence, the massacres in Tracker, you know, the dispossessed elders in Charlie's Country. He's, you know, he's sort of, he's really played them all.
I'll just sort of, you know, run through some of those films with some of my listeners. You know, it'll be quite sad if you don't know who the man is, you know, but, you know, I guess one of the recent films, documentaries, would be, you know, the documentary that we're talking about now, but others is Charlie's Country, Walkabout Boy, which was his first one, which he really talks about quite a bit. Tracker, which is an amazing film as well. Ten Canoes, he briefly was in Crocodile Dundee.
I was going to say, it's a storyteller in Ten Canoes.
Australia, as well as many others. Some of the films that I, you know, strongly remember and follow would be The Tracker and also Rabbit Proof Fence. Amazing films. And as you mentioned, the characters that he played really sort of, he played characters in a time when it was a part of Australia's dark history, as you mentioned as well. And very important to highlight those characters as well. With the documentary, what sort of direction did you want to go in, and how much, I guess, sort of creative or how much control did Dave want?
I
don't mean as in control as Unc being sort of a, you know what I mean, it's all about him and, you know, but he's involvement and input as well at this stage.
I know exactly what you mean, Bo. That's one of the reasons why he's a producer, because that, you know, that kind of gives him the formal authority. That means that everybody from the outside looking in goes, yeah, you know, he's sitting in the driver's seat here. From a creative perspective, it was a true collaboration between David and I. What I admire about David is that when he's working, he works with others, and he works with his director, and in the, you know, in my name is Gulpalil, that's me, and what David wants to do is gives his very best. So he works with me so that I can support him to bring that out, and that's, you know, I greatly admire that, because, you know, there are enough actors around who kind of think it's all about them. And in the end, it's sort of quite reductive where, you know, David kind of goes, okay, then, you know, to nail it, I'm going to need to work with my team around me. And he just loves the camera. You know, he just looks down the lens and there's nobody else there between him and his audience, you know. And that is, you know, that's what makes him such a remarkable, you know, performer. He has the it factor, but no one can define what it is.
And I guess, like, with you know, anybody who's a part of, you know, acting or sort of any entertainer as well, their personal life is sort of always highlighted. Not that I want to sort of go into it as well, and, you know, but I feel like with sort of Charlie's Country, and then also with this documentary, he sort of wanted to really highlight more so about, you know, I guess, other aspects of his personal life than necessarily the bad side of what came in the media as well.
So you mean him as a drug and alcoholic?
Yeah, definitely. You know what I mean? Obviously wanted to talk about that, you know, and which he did sort of acknowledge that past. But he also wanted to talk, you know, more so about, you know, where he's from, you know, his people as well. That aspect was always strong about his identity. You know, because we know how media portrays Aboriginal people. You know, they always jump on the bad stories, and he wanted to set the story straight and say, "Hey, this is who I am."
You've got it. Exactly, Bo. Exactly. The fact that he does touch on being a drug and alcoholic was at my urging. I sort of said to him, you know, this is for this documentary to be authentic, we need to cover it all. And he, you know, he being a proud young old man is like, well, why would I want to talk about that? Why would I want to bring shame on myself? And it's like, you know, this is for a white fella audience as well. They need to know it. And so he had, he got it and understood that we would need to deal with it. But first and foremost, what David is, you know, what he's kind of saying all along is, I am who I am because of my culture. Mm. I the camera sees me. Why does it see him? It's because he's so grounded in culture. Mm-hmm. He knows his physicality. He can dance. He can hunt. That's it for him. Makes him who he is, mm-hmm. and that overrides everything. And I think is one of the reasons why he came out of his, you know, he stopped drinking, he stopped smoking the ganja, he stopped smoking the cigarettes. So, yeah, I think more about him and his culture than anything else.
If you're just tuning in to Let's Talk, my guest this morning on the program is Molly Reynolds, director of Gulpalil, an amazing documentary about an amazing man who has been as a young black person growing up. Thankfully enough, I went to the Murray School, where it was literally 99% Aboriginal population. And then I went to a non-Indigenous high school, very multicultural. And I remember sitting and watching films like Rabbitproof Fence or Tracker and seeing somebody like, you know, like David, like Uncle on the film, and just feeling very inspired, you know, because in that time, yeah, we never really saw much representation of Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people on film as well. Could we sort of talk to the legacy of him and his presence, and just sort of, I was watching an award ceremony that he got. I believe it was for his performance in Charlie's Country. And, you know, before he could even speak, it was like a 2 to 3 minute ovation for him. You know, the crowd just sort of, you know, really felt, you know, how important, you know, this award, not just to him was, but, you know, this was a sort of affirming his legacy on screen as well. You know, how important has, you know, his image been on the screen, you know, as sort of, you know, one of few Aboriginal actors who have sort of done, you know, the film screen here in Australia and around the world?
Oh, look, I think he's in many ways he's the most important. He's the most important because he was the first. There he was on the screen, not only just him as a black fella on screen alongside white fellas, but he could act, he could perform, he could kind of steal the scene, you know, not that he ever did because he was such a good actor, but he could, you know, he owned his place on the big screen. And that was, I think, really empowering that he was, you know, not only a black fella, but an actor as well. And that is, you know, that was sort of quite an accomplishment when we look, you know, when we look at it being 50 years ago, and that he was able to hold that place for so long, that, you know, that David Gulpalil was not a one-off, you know, that he was able to return to role after role, and still, you know, be as beguiling and as magnetic as he's ever been.
And the fact that he can act, you know, he has that great repertoire, you know, great presence on screen. I think, as you mentioned before, you know, it's sort of, you know, when he's sort of on set, it's just him and sort of the camera, you know, like he does his thing. You know, could we sort of, you know, for our listeners as well, walk a bit through the documentary? You know, it's sort of set, you know, in a time where, you know, I keep getting mixed up whether to call him Dave or Uncle, sort of out of respect as well. So I guess I'll just continue to call him
you
Uncle.
You just moved between the two.
Yeah,
well, now,
yeah.
Okay,
you're
going to stick to Unc. Yep.
Yeah, okay. You know, it's set in a very hard time at the moment for Unc. You know, it's sort of towards the end of his life. Yeah, and as you mentioned, mm-hmm. you know, like Unc's still around, sort of kicking goals. Paint a picture for our listeners, you know, because through the whole film, he's either hooked up to sort of some medical machines or taking medication.
Yeah, look, it was, David was, you know, his whole thing with this film is you're going to film me not only to the end, but beyond the end, like right through to my death ceremony. And there's a terrific line in the film where he says, look, you know, my funeral, it can be short, 5-7 days until whenever you're satisfied. And so that was what we were originally going to do. And, you know, we wanted, and when I say we, you know, it's David, wanting to kind of cover, you know, his remarkable life. I mean, how many people get to meet Muhammad Ali and Bob Marley and, you know, Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix,
he kinda,
yes.
Yeah, he met them all. Her Majesty, the Queen of England. And so, it's, you know, this documentary is about his incredible life. It's also about, you know, a sick dying person, and you know, to kind of capture the routine of that, you know, the sort of the struggles that it, you know, that it takes, and it's such hard work staying alive for David that it's almost like everything else kind of becomes irrelevant. And what I mean by that is his career. He's, you know, he's no longer, for him, it's no longer about him, you know, acting and performing and working. Now it's about him staying alive. And I think that, you know, that David shares it with us is, you know, is all credit to him, that he's prepared to take us on this really difficult journey with him.
Definitely, you know, because like anybody, you know, if our image of somebody is, you know, what we see on TV or on the films, you know, he's a very, you know, slender, strong, you know, able body sort of individual, and as you mentioned, you know, he wanted to sort of film the whole way through till the end, you know, and that meant sort of the medical appointments, that meant the medication and everything, and we get to see, you know, Unc in sort of a totally different light. And, you know, for me, that was kind of hard, you know, to sort of see, you know, because I've grown up, you know, watching, you know, Unc's films, you know, throughout my teen years and even now through, you know, adult and, you know, myself becoming a parent as well, and, you know, watching just how brilliant he is, and then sort of seeing this aspect as well. It was sort of, you know, a bit confronting as well. And,
No, I was just going to say, yes, it is. You know, it is when you're kind of your superhero. You know, you kind of you catch them in their pajamas, as such. You know, it is. It also kind of speaks to a future when he'll no longer be with us. And that is, I think, that's what's sort of hard to take. And that when he goes, so much is gone with him.
So true. But, you know, as everything, you know, there is this amazing legacy of an amazing man and a career spanning, you know, as you mentioned, almost 50 years, you know, a boy who was, you know, spotted, you know, in his community in Northern Territory and brought down and, you know, started his first film 14 or 16. And, you know, from there, you know, had this amazing career, as you mentioned, meeting, you know, some people like, you know, Bob Marley and Muhammad Ali and Jimi Hendrix, just to name a few, like they're icons in themselves, and he's sharing his moments with them, and, you know, it's amazing, and, you know, like It's, you know, like,
yeah,
he's...
And so, I kind of, oh, yeah, what I love about that is, you know, that all those people, you know, when he kind of, he says, I met a lot of famous people, he always, you know, he always sort of puts, you know, the black fellas first. Like, it's like, now they're, you know, they're the people to admire and watch. You know, yeah, I met Clint Eastwood, you know, and he gave me this, that, you know, we had this steak on a barbecue. But, you know, I stood up with, you know, with the black fellas of the time, which was really, really hard work. You know, the US in the 60s and the 70s was incredibly conservative. You know, anyone who cut through was, you know, was all the more amazing for it.
Yeah, no, definitely. This film, it's it's an amazing film. You know, I urge people to see it. When does it come out and where can people go to see it?
It is playing around Australia at cinemas near you on May 27th. So that, I think, is only 2 days away. But, you know, it's in over 50 cinemas. So, I mean, yeah, but at the same time, Australia is a big country. So, yeah, it'll be hard.
And there's no reason for this not to be in the box office. Like, you know, I believe it was the last three sort of Australian films dominated the Australian box office, you know, sort of kicked out, you know, the American or sort of the overseas film. So there's no reason why this film shouldn't do the same thing as well.
Oh, look, Bo, my main reason for it, you know, it going gangbusters at the box office is that it would speak to, you know, mainstream Australia, you know, dominant culture, you know, engaging with Gulpawil, engaging with, you know, with blackfella culture. So I really do hope that that is the case, because then what it speaks to is a really positive thing.
Definitely, you know, and then, you know, hopefully, I'm sure, you know, Hunk has inspired many Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander actors to come through the ranks, and I'm sure there's many waiting, you know, to get their shot like he did as well. And I'm sure, you know, he's one person, you know, to say that, you know, he's opening up, you know, these spaces, you know, for our mob to be there as well. And, you know, so I guess when the time does come, when Unc does pass, you know, he has definitely left an amazing legacy, not just for his mob, but, you know, definitely for, you know, blackfellas and, you know, people here in Australia to sort of remember and honour, you know, his time on the screen.
Yeah, you know, I think, yes, it is, you know, it will make Australia a far better place, and we do need to get to that place.
Definitely. Molly, thank you for joining us on Let's Talk this morning. It was great to chat to you about the film as well, and, you know, definitely would love to invite you back on the program as well. I do hope things go well with this film. Like I said, there's no reason why this film shouldn't be up there in the box office breaking records like High Ground and some of the other recent Australian films have done in the last year as well. So you know, congratulations on a great film as well, and, you know,
thank you, Bo, but I think that congratulations should go to the legendary David Gulpawil.
Are you experiencing flu-like symptoms and need to get tested? We've got respiratory assessment clinics across southeast Queensland that we've set up for mob. Our clinics provide free parking and easy access to our facilities, and because we're taking bookings, there's no waiting around when you arrive. It's as simple as arrive to your appointment, getting your test done, and going home to wait for your results. No referral is needed. If you've got any flu-like symptoms, no matter how mild, make sure you call one of our respiratory clinics directly to book an appointment. To find your nearest one, visit www.deadlychoices.com.au/healthchecks.
A message from the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health.
Station sponsor. so sad, my dear? Why are you looking so blue? Are you thinking of someone so far away in a beautiful place called Poughkeepsie? Poughkeepsie, my beautiful home. It's the place where I was born, where the moon and stars that shine makes me longing for home. Poughkeepsie, my beautiful home. Take me across the sea, over the deep blue sea. Darling, won't you take me back to my home, T.I.
when you get up in the morning, hear the work bell ring, and they march you to the table. You see the same old thing. Ain't no food upon the table. Ain't no fork up in the pan. But you better not complain, boy. You'll get in trouble with the man. At the midnight station, shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Well, if you're ever in Houston, I said you better do right. Well, you better not gamble. I say you better not fight, boy, or the sheriff will grab you and the boys will be down. Well, the next thing you know, boy, you will be prison bound. Well, let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Wall out, umbrella on her shoulder, and a piece of paper in her hand. Well, she come to see the governor. She wants to free a black man out. And let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine its ever-loving light on me.
Nasty world, no.
Are you experiencing flu-like symptoms and need to get tested? We've got respiratory assessment clinics across southeast Queensland that we've set up for MOB. Our clinics provide free parking and easy access to our facilities. And because we're taking bookings, there's no waiting around when you arrive. It's as simple as arrive to your appointment, getting your test done, and going home to wait for your results. No referral is needed. If you've got any flu-like symptoms, no matter how mild, make sure you call one of our respiratory clinics directly to book an appointment. To find your nearest one, visit www.deadlychoices.com.au/healthchecks.
A message from the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health.
Station sponsor.
Well, I've been well late last night. My heart was heavy and my pockets light. I spend my money and I spend my time. I found that the diamond had lost its shine. Now I'm heading back to the diamond mine. But I don't know what I hope to find. Cause it's getting dark and I'm stumbling blind.
Was in my heart. Hate, he said, drove us apart. Hate, he said, to let it go. Hate, he said, but he did not know that what I had inside of me was a sadness born of empathy. That because I did not celebrate, it did not mean I was full of hate. I asked him to just try and see through my eyes the tragedy of dispossession, of the pain, the hurt, of the red of blood that stained this earth. I mourn for all the lives that were lost. I mourn for what this country cost. I mourn for how we came to be, for the end does not justify the means. It's in the past, he said, move on. Why mourn for something so long gone? I looked at him and I came to say, do you think we should forget about Anzac Day? It's not the same, was his retort. I said, wait a minute. Give it some thought. People died while fighting for their land, protecting it from a foreign hand. Make no mistake, there was a war that had been fought on these very shores. A war that didn't always discriminate whether elderly or infants could meet the same fate as those who fought to protect them so, and that's why we should never let go. Never forget what price was paid for us to live as we do today. He looked at me quite seriously, said he celebrates because we're free. He celebrates our democracy and everything great in this country. I said, that's fine, I get that, it's clear, just please don't forget how we got here. Just take a moment to think it through what price was paid for me and you to live in this country as we do. Don't take for granted the sacrifice both of land and of life. We need to remember those who died, not let the legacy be swept aside. You got an apology, he said. It talked about loss. It mentioned the dead. What more do you want? He asked of me. And so I replied in the hope he would see. We have a day for Australia, the Queen, for New Year's and Christmas and all those between, like Labour and Easter, the Anzac Parade, and just what the hell is Boxing Day? There's even a day that we have for the shows, but nothing that speaks of my people's woes. A national day to acknowledge the cause, to acknowledge all that has happened before, and I don't mean NAIDOC, I mean something more where the whole nation stops, like it does for a horse. A day, is that too much to ask, to remind us don't ignore the past? He processed my words and looked at the ground. We both sat in silence. Then there was a sound that seemed like heaven to me, a sound of two words that said, I agree. We talked some more as the day came to end, and despite our differences, I'd made a new friend. He understood as the day came to night that I needed some things in this country made right. And because I did not celebrate, it did not mean I was full of hate.